Hey, everybody. Welcome to Journey of Hope. I'm your host, Rodney Mathers. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My very special guest today, author Dr. Beth Janaris. Got a lot of cool things to say to ex-offenders, and we're going to get with her right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey y'all, remember you can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney. Sure would like to hear from you, so drop me an email, okay? Hey everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Beth Janaris. She's written a book called Turning Me to We, The Art of Partnering with Mindfulness. Beth, welcome to the Journey of Hope.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Good deal. Can we get a little bit of your background? Maybe you tell us a little bit about yourself as we get rolling here.
You bet. So I have three graduate degrees. One in counseling, one in business, and one in something called oriental medicine. So I see the world from a spirit, mind, body perspective, and I work with people to help them align their actions with spirit so that they can be profoundly successful. And I've been working in the field, I don't know, maybe 25 years. I hate saying that, makes me a little bit older than I want to be. But lots of background working with couples and in groups with business.
Okay. Well, what does this mean, turning me into we? What is that all about?
Great question. So I don't know if you saw in the book, I'm sure people who are listening haven't seen the book, there's a tagline that says shifting competition and narcissism into collaboration and connection, and that's the concept of me to we. So when we are young, we start out being dependent on another, and our focus is very me-oriented. Me, give me this is my needs are these, etc. And others are taking care of us. So that's sort of a dependent position. And in relationship, people often create codependent positions. Then as we age, we get a little bit older, when we move into adolescence and young adulthood, we move into I, which has to do with being independent and being able to completely take care of our own needs. And eyes tend to be more competitive. Knees tend to be more narcissistic. And when you move into we, then you're moving into an interdependent relationship, which means that each individual has the capacity to ask for things and negotiate and have a separate self. And then there's also a couple or partnership where there's a third entity, so to speak, where both parties are supporting each other toward co-created or collaborative goals.
That's not
so that's
something...
me through mm-hmm. I to we.
Okay. Let's talk about the we for just... Well, my first observation when you're explaining this is my wife and I, we have three adult children. I say adult, they're in their early 20s, mid-20s, and they're out of college and married, and we kind of worry sometimes that we don't see the I part that you're talking about developing more in them. And I'm wondering, that was the first thing that jumped out at me. I mean, is there a time limit on when these kinds of changes take place in our life? Is it, tell us about that.
Okay, sure. So I would say that in a typical style of growing up, and I'm basing this on some psychological theory that was developed by Erik Erikson, getting into adulthood and are still in a me style of relating to others, to authority, to the community, and wanting to still be cared for. When you move into an I, it really does require boundaries, and you have to say, this is what I'm responsible for, this is what I need, and how do I get it, and how do I create that? And we've lost some of our ability to put that together in recent years. I'd say in the last, I would say the thousands, we've had some trouble really encouraging children to move from the me to the I.
So, my kids are normal? Yeah, I guess my wife's over there shaking her head. But, you know, the thing we've noticed is we have a lot of couple. This is not something I really wanted to talk about today, but we'll go down this road for a second. We have couple friends who have children our same age, and there's this whole phenomenon of boomerang kids. I mean, the kids are going to college and coming right back home. And at least we were able to get them out of the nest a little bit in our situation. But, okay, now this we part that you talk about, that's not something that just happens automatically. I'm assuming that that's something that takes years to develop, right?
The we part?
Mm-hmm.
It should develop if we go through our developmental stages efficiently and the community is supportive of people developing boundaries, taking ownership of their responsibilities, and aligning with that concept, then it is something that people can develop into easily into the we. I talk about how to do it in the book based on different places where people get thrown off, either because of trauma in their early childhood, based on issues of divorce or other sorts of loss. Other things can really make this development go awry. And so an individual would have to say, I want to change that, and I want to be more happily developed and more happily relating with others where both parties are positively growing, and so I'm going to do a few things to make that happen. And so the book talks about how to find out where you are and then how to move through that. So it can happen quickly,
yeah.
Or if you get stuck, then you have to rework some things.
Well, Beth, one of the things that I hear you saying that, I don't know, I hear this kind of thing, you know, a lot, and I just sometimes it, I don't know, sometimes it just kind of gets me. It's like, you know, blame the parent. If there's a boundary issue that you're talking about, or, you know, like we're talking about my kids in the 20s, and we still see those tinges of teenage selfishness in them, and it concerns us a little bit. Isn't there a point where it's their responsibility? I mean, because I hear this, well, maybe their boundaries weren't laid out right when they were younger, or this kind of blame the parent kind of thing. I guess what I'm gently trying to say is, do we always got to blame the parent?
Well, I'm sorry that that's what you're hearing from me, because that's certainly not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't believe that it is a parent's fault whether a child turns out successfully or not. I do, however, think that parents guide children when they're children. And if we make a mistake, we don't do something right, the child will have difficulty. The child, once the child becomes an adult, is going to be responsible, whether it was their parents' fault, which I'm putting in quotations, or their lack of understanding of what their parent is trying to teach them, or their desire to listen to someone other than their parent that got them into trouble, it's still the individual's responsibility to create a successful life, which is why the book was written.
Okay.
For individuals who find themselves in bad situations, that they want to change. And if they want to change, then they're having to take responsibility.
Well, there really is a reason why, you know, I bring this sort of thing up. This show is primarily for ex-offenders and their families. And so when you have a 30-year-old that is going to prison for the third time and they say, well, you know, I'm screwed up because my dad was in prison, you know, and some people buy into that, and I'm glad to hear that you don't.
No, my book is completely about individual responsibility. It's about existential. We're all responsible for all the choices we make. If we'd like to live differently, then we should change the decisions we're making and the way that we're living. And the book gives lots and lots and lots of great suggestions for how a person can do that. I did write a different book, and the other book was called Turning No to On, The Art of Parenting with Mindfulness, which actually gives some assistance to people who are in the process of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Adolescents, toddlers, and children, how to set those guidelines in place so they can really guide their children to be responsible for their own behavior. But the book that we're discussing, the Me to We book, is really about adults. And adults are responsible for how they act in the world. And if they don't like the relationships they're in, then this gives them an opportunity to learn some new ways to behave so that they can create what they do desire. There is a problem with our culture right now where we are much too of a nanny state from my perspective. And my book doesn't support that at all. My book is about people working together and becoming collaborative because it's beneficial for our society to be so, but we aren't responsible for each other. We're responsible to each other. And there is a big difference between those two.
Okay. Okay. Beth, we're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, more with Beth Janaris. The book is called Turning Me to We, The Art of Partnering with Mindfulness. And we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers. You're on the Journey of Hope. Hey there. So do you play music in your downtime? I know a lot of you do. Do you have a Jam Buddy chord chart yet? And if you don't, why not? The Jam Buddy chord chart teaches you something called the Nashville numbering system. For those of you out there that have decided to take up playing an instrument, I know a lot of guys in prison that I knew personally that decided that when they got out, they were going to learn how to play an instrument. Well, if you're one of those guys like me and you've taken that up, the Jam Buddy chord chart is something that you need. That Nashville numbering system enables you to play songs in any key, and this thing only costs about $4. The way you find it is by clicking on the link next to the podcast, or you can go to angiesbanjo.com and click on the link for the Jam Buddy chord chart. It's the Jam Buddy chord chart.
Told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars, but I knew I had it coming. I know I can't.
What exactly is mindfulness, and how does it assist in creating successful relationships?
Well, one of the things that I talk about in this book is I talk about how we relate in our partnerships, in our relationships, based on a few things. It starts out from a sociological perspective that the groups that we belong to affect how we see the world. And so as we develop, we see the world in a singular way, first from our early relationship. And then as we develop, we decide which parts of those things we want to hold on to, we agree with, and what we want to change. And one of the ways in which we look at that is through something called mindfulness. Now, mindfulness has many sources. There's a psychological concept of mindfulness, which is what people do when they're reality testing and psychotherapy or looking at cognitive behavioral change. We're trying to think about things in a critical way. It's called, like critical thinking. We're evaluating things from all perspectives. And there's also a concept of mindfulness that comes from Buddhist tradition, and that's about standing in the center and being compassionate. You also see this strongly in the Judeo-Christian perspective, where we need to look at things from the other person's perspective and understand where they might be coming from and try to discern where a middle ground might be where we may agree with each other. So one of the steps that I suggest people use is when we're interacting with somebody, if we're going to be using our mindfulness, if we hear, we use our senses, our internal senses, if we hear or see that somebody has misunderstood us, we can ask, what did you hear me say? So that we're being mindful, we're looking to what was displayed to the other person and try to get more closely connected to what they're trying to say to us, so we can make a better choice that fits both parties.
Okay, I hear a lot of components of empathy in what you're explaining there, just the ability to put yourself into somebody else's shoes. But you also say that we get locked into ineffective thought and communication patterns. How does that happen to people?
So we kind of do that again from our style of previous relationships. So there's our early childhood relationships, but there are also our relationships with our first partners. And if something goes awry in those first relationships, if we're traumatized in some way or we get hurt, we can misunderstand what that means. And when we do that, then we create a situation where we might get stuck thinking about things always in that one way, like how a rut goes around something. You kind of fall into the rut. Well, we get into a rut of thinking. So we start to act as if the person with whom we're discussing something is actually in the same place as that earlier relationship. Mm-hmm. And that creates a problem. Mindfulness then really helps in that arena because we say, huh, does this make sense? Let me think if this fits with the situation today. We bring ourselves into our center, and then we can have a better present moment interaction with that person.
Well, I'm thinking, who in their life hasn't had, especially in their younger life, a relationship explode on them or get a broken heart. And so what you're saying is that we have to consciously move, through that we've got to go back and look at that. Is that what you're saying? And make sure that we're making the right decisions based on what happened to us in the past. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, actually, I'm not really saying that. I'm more talking about staying in the present moment. So if let's say there was something that happened when I was a young person, maybe my mother died, and so now I'm starting a new relationship, and I'm fearful that this person's going to die, that they're going to leave me. So I have to be able to say, oh, I understand. As I get closer, that old experience of somebody leaving me when I'm close comes into play. And then I say in the present, I don't have any evidence that you're going to leave me. So I'm just going to live with you in the way that it's helping me to grow forward based on what's actually happening now in the relationship. So I have to try to keep people in the present moment as opposed to going back too much. I've never found that it was, I'm a therapist, but I have to be honest that I don't always find it that useful to go back and keep reworking old things that happened back in our past. What I think is more beneficial is to understand if the past is still affecting us now, how we can unlink that effect so that we can be interacting in the now with the person right in front of us.
And an important part of that is communication, right? I mean, you seem to talk quite a bit about communication.
You bet.
Let's talk about that for a second then. In what ways can we begin shifting our perspective to enhance communication? That's a question that was forwarded to me along with some of these other questions, and I think this is a good one. What can we do to improve our communication?
Well, I like to encourage people to, again, we're back to the past and history and getting stuck in how we hear things, but I like to encourage people to try to interact more fully in the present moment. And I know that sounds difficult to do. Sometimes we're rushed and we're multitasking, but we want to really make sure that we're receiving the message sent. Or if we're the sender of the message, we want to make sure that the message received is the one we meant to send. And the best way to do that is to use something I call a stop, look, and listen method. But I also, and I'll explain that, but I also think it helps to simply use the word, things like, what did you hear me say? How did you get that message? Things are what and how. Where did we go awry in the conversation? To why? Why tends to create an adversarial interaction between people. Why did you do that? Is more adversarial than what did you hear me say? Because what did you hear me say indicates that you are interested in the other person's perspective, and then you're going to integrate that into what you actually said. So the stop, look, and listen that I talk a little bit about is just like when we're crossing the street, right? We stop, we look both ways, and we listen for a car. Well, in interactions, if we hear something that is awry, that doesn't fit with what we're trying to communicate, or we think we're hearing the same thing we always hear, we want to stop and sort of clarify. And clarification can be a very gentle way of asking what you heard or what's going on or how did things change. And so that's one.
Okay. Okay, cool. What about arguing? Is there a right and a wrong way to, be adversarial with somebody?
Well, I discourage people to be in an adversarial position because we're coupling. So unless we're, going around being an attorney doesn't really help because with being adversarial and being an attorney, we're trying to prove the other person wrong and ourselves right. And one of the things I talk a lot about is there a middle way in some of these situations? I mean, is it a perspective thing? Now, if indeed there's a right-wrong, as in one person believes in corporal punishment and the other person does not, they have a right-wrong. However, they can find a middle way. They can say, what is your goal for the child? Well, my goal is that the child is disciplined. And then the other person can say, well, that's my goal too. So where can we find a disciplinary action that is going to be efficient to teach the child the boundary and yet meet the needs of both people? So that is a way in which you might argue. You're discussing, you're presenting your information, but you're trying to get on the same side, and the problem is what you're against. Let's solve this problem. We're on the same side. We're not against each other. And this way, couples or partners or parents have a much better ability to stay connected to each other, collaborate, and also solve problems.
And when we're communicating, can we be too passive?
Can we be too passive?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
This would be the last question. If you could just talk about that.
It's actually a fairly active process. I think when we are too passive, people make assumptions about what we really think and mean, and we may actually create some problems for ourselves.
Okay. We're kind of running out of time here. How do we find your book, which I just think is excellent, and I really enjoy the things that you're talking about here. How do we find your book?
You know, the easiest way would be to go to Amazon.com, and it, the name of the book is Turning Me to We, The Art of Partnering with Mindfulness. And you can also go to my website. That's www.bethgeneris.com. And those are two great ways.
Okay, good deal. Beth, I feel like we just scratched the surface. I wish we could talk some more. Maybe we'll have you back on sometime. It's Beth Gennaris. The book is called Turning Me to We, The Art of Partnering with Mindfulness. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Everybody, I just want to remind you that as you surf the internet and you come across places and sites that are devoted to helping ex-offenders, be careful what you do there, because some of those are just out for your money. If you come across a web page and all they talk about is, you know, signing up for this or getting their magazine and you have to pay for it, and people coming out of prison don't have any cash, man. And I've been to prison. I also know some people that are running some of these organizations that haven't even been to prison, and you know, so they don't even, they just see it as a market, a place to gouge people for money. So be careful. We'll never ask for nothing other than the Jam Buddy chord chart, which we use to buy cable and stuff for the little studio here. We never ask for money here. We know you ain't got it. Hell, I ain't got no money. So, you know, be careful of those websites that wants you to buy stuff for their help, okay? You want to stay away from those. Now, the authors that come on the show, you know what? If they've got a book to sell or whatever, more power to them. But I think you're going to find that I squeeze the most important information out of them before I let them go on the interview. So when you listen to the interview, you've heard the thrust of what it is they're trying to sell. So you might want to keep that in mind too. Okay? Be careful on the internet. Don't be giving away your money to people. Well, another show come and gone. I want to thank my special guest, Beth Gennaris, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.